Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the No Silicast podcast, hosted at podfeed.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever-so-slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, November 26th, 2006, and this is show number 71. Well, it was Thanksgiving in the United States this week, and I took the entire week off. You would think that sounds relaxing and marvelous and that I probably got a lot done. Well, it was a week of family and cooking and all that kind of thing. But in reality, I spent my entire week moving podfeet.com. I'm going to get into a lot of details of that later, but I wanted to tell you some of the things that I'm thankful for. I'm thankful for the fact that I had a husband who did virtually all of the cooking for Thanksgiving dinner, from brining the turkey to making the cranberry chutney, making cornbread stuffing from scratch, including making corn on the cob and cutting it off the cob. He did a ton of work, and he's been so supportive of me doing the podcast. I could not have done this without him, that's for sure. I'm also really thankful for my mother. She was here this week, which was really nice. She spent 4 days here. My daughter brought her up from school. They live near each other, and so they came up and saw us and stayed for 4 days. And that was just great. I think I appreciate my mom more and more as I get older because she's 86 years old and she's blind. She spent the entire time she was here listening to a book on tape about Google. She's 86 years old and she wants to know what's going on in the world. And if you don't know what's going on in Google, you don't know what's going on in the world today. So I thought it was really cool that she wanted to understand something as technical as that. And it was really, really fun talking to her about it. In fact, I got to read that book. She's also taking a creative writing class. Can you figure that? She's had a problem, though, because her 386 computer running DOS, yeah, I said DOS, that's before Windows, is working just fine, but her HP 500 printer seems to have given up the ghost. But luckily, I think I found a woman in Texas who's available to sell her 500 printer to me, so maybe we can get that going for old mom and get her going in her creative writing class. I think we could all take a lesson from her on how to keep lively and young, no matter what your circumstances are. The other thing I'm really thankful for is the people who helped me with this podcast. This week, Niraj and Bart and Matt did a ton of work for me, helping me move podfeet.com. And I'll get into the details, like I said, but I'm really thankful for those people. And the other people I've met through podcasting, like Tim Verporten, it's just been great fun to get to know all of these people. Let me start with the usual corrections, though, from last week's show. I think Bart is giving QA Director Steve a run for his money. He found two errors in the podcast last week. To be exact, his words were, "I just wanted to point out a few wee things." Remember, I went through an elaborate and unnecessary explanation of GNU? I inadvertently described it as a recursive acronym for GNU's not Linux, when in reality, it's GNU's not Unix. See how the U works better than the L in that abbreviation? Anyway, Bart also gave me some information on what GNU actually is. Wikipedia says it's an operating system, and that's where I was quoting from, but Bart explained it better to me. Here's what he said. An operating system can be considered to have three layers: kernel, user land, and GUI. Linux is only a kernel. GNU provides the user land, and things like X11 and GNOME or X11 and KDE provide the GUI in Linux in a Linux distribution. So GNU is a part of what most people call Linux, and the technically correct name for what people call Linux is actually GNU Linux, though only a complete geek or nerd will ever talk about GNU Linux. Well, I'm not sure I really followed all of that, but I figured there might be someone else out there who is just as nerdy as Bart and was irritated at my subpar explanation of GNU. So now you'll feel better. I do know listener Tim will have enjoyed this, and will enjoy Bart's further explanation that the P in LAMP was originally not PHP, but it was Perl. You see, Tim is a Perl developer and believes that you could pretty much affect world peace with Perl if you just put your mind to it. Thanks for the clarifications, Bart. I'll rest easy knowing you're a good backup for QA Director Steve. Those people who know me really well know that I have a terrible habit of repeating my stories. I've tried to keep that from you, but evidently I told the story of the MagSafe connector and the Great Dane 2 weeks in a row. This is a lesson to me. See, I always write out my show notes word for word before the show, which helps me keep coherent thoughts as well as being of great benefit to those who prefer to read the blog over listening to the podcast. So when I went to tell the MagSafe connector Great Dane story last week, I had a feeling I might have already told the story. So I headed over to the previous week's notes and looked to see if I'd already told it. I found no evidence that it had been told, so I proceeded to tell it last week. Evidently, the previous week I had broken from tradition and actually spoke off the top of my head. I guess I can't take a wild risk like that again. QA Director Steve, Listener Ryan, and my mechanic Honda Bob all called me on that. Jeez, I can't get any slack around here at all. Well, let's talk about moving Podfeet now. My biggest advice to you is, no matter how awful your web host is, if they're overcharging you, if they're down 3 days a week, never ever try to move your website. Just don't do it. I don't care if you have to give up thousands of listeners and readers, it is absolutely not worth the trouble. Just put up a going out of business sign and start over on a new site. I mean, tell a couple of your friends maybe that you're over here now. Just give it up. Seriously. This week, I probably spent, it's got to be at least 30 hours working on it. And it's been, the amount of time that Bart and Niraj and Matt have spent on this just adds up to at least as much time as I've spent. So let me see if I can even vaguely construct what we did this week. The good news for you is that I do have a poor memory, so I won't be able to take as long to explain it as it did to actually go through all the work. The first thing I had to do, which I think I did talk about last week, was buying the new hosting account over at GoDaddy to replace the VisiWeb disaster. I'll give the technical terminology for how this works first, and then an explanation of what it really means. You see, I had access to a server over on VisiWeb that had an IP address that was associated with the name podfeet.com. I had to move that over to GoDaddy through a change to the domain name registration, otherwise known as DNS. Think about it like this. You have an address for your house, say 123 Main Street. That address is associated with the name My House. If you move to 456 Central Street, your address has changed, but it's still called My House. Does that make sense? Well, podfeet.com is the name of my site, and it was at one IP address, and I had to move it over to a new IP address, but keep the name the same. Sounds simple, right? Well, technically that part was pretty easy in the big picture, even though I whined a lot about how hard that was. But if I just moved the name over to the new address, nothing would have worked over at podfeet.com because of all the files that would still be over at the old IP address. It'd be kind of like if you moved over to 456 Central Street, but you kind of forgot to get a moving van to move all your stuff over to the new house. As I explained before, I use a content management system called WordPress to create the podfeet.com website. So while it's invisible to me, everything I write is actually filling out fields in a database, and then WordPress defines how that information is displayed. For example, there's a structure to tell it where to put the sidebar and where to put the header, and what's a comment, what's a post, those different kinds of things. Then in that database, I put the stuff that lives in the header and the sidebar, and it fills it out nicely for me on screen. With me so far? All right, good, because it gets way worse. So, on the new server, Niraj and I installed WordPress through GoDaddy's installation script. Seems simple enough, right? Then on the VisiWeb side, I push the backup button for the WordPress database. Okay, now all I need to do is move the database backup to the new site. That should be easy. Well, not so easy. It turns out, in doing the database backup to the new site, some little goofy symbols got mucked up in the file as the backup came down to my machine. Isn't that swell? It's just basically a text file, but it has these little hidden characters that mucked it all up. So Niraj had me download a freeware tool called Text Wrangler from barebones.com, the makers of the famous BB Edit. We worked with Text Wrangler because as a text editor, It allows the user to search for what they call gremlins, the little pieces of gunk that got in my file to hork it up. I don't know why there were gremlins in my SQL database, but trust me, they were there. I think it's all a scam to get me to install more freeware, you know? All right, so now we got a clean SQL database. We got an installation of WordPress over on GoDaddy. How do I stuff the database into WordPress? Well, this was where I definitely needed even more adult supervision. Turns out there's a tool called phpMyAdmin, sort of a web-based tool, and allows you to manage your databases. Luckily, it was on both VisiWeb and GoDaddy, so I was able to work with it in both places. It's basically a way of looking at and managing your databases. Again, with Niraj's expert help, I was able to import my SQL database. That sounded pretty good, but how do I tell WordPress to talk to that newly imported database? Well, it turns out there's a little file in WordPress called wp-config.php, and it does all the work. I don't know much about PHP, but I do know it's a programming language that lets you design web pages that are dynamic, just like what I'm doing with WordPress. All right, back to connecting the database of all my posts and all your comments and the sidebar links and all of that into the new WordPress. This config file tells WordPress how to find the database. Program that bad boy up should be no problem at all, right? Well, that didn't go smoothly either. But I'll come back to that part. Hold that thought. As I was working on this big move from the old Podfeet to the new Podfeet, I realized I had one big problem. How do I tell if I'm looking at the new and improved Podfeet over on GoDaddy or the old one over on VisiWeb? Because if I've pulled everything in and it's all up to date, they're going to look exactly the same. So I went over to GoDaddy and I made a post saying, test, ignore me. I'm sorry, it was over on VisiWeb on the old one. I put a post saying, test, ignore me. That turned out to be invaluable, so that one's going to look different. The new one won't have that ignore me site. So we finally got the new WordPress looking at the database, but the links on the right-hand side were all horked up. Well, I was pretty sure if I could log into WordPress, I could just fix it. But every time I went to log in to WordPress on the new side, it kept taking me back over to the GoDaddy side. I fussed around with that for days with Niraj's help. Okay, like one whole day, but it was a long day. Never did figure it out on that day. Then, on Wednesday, Research Assistant Bart made the critical error of giving me his ICQ chat number so I could bother him live about this whole nightmare. That was pretty much the end of his peace and quiet for all this week. Once I suckered him into chat, it was just a short leap to get him to go over to Skype so we could converse more efficiently. I knew it was a huge favor to ask of him, but Bart was so terribly gracious and so entertaining while we worked. One of my favorite things about Bart is when something odd happens on his screen, he goes, "Err?" in exactly the same voice as Scooby-Doo. I asked him whether he watched a lot of cartoons as a kid, and he confessed that he did. Well, we did about 2,368 separate things to the database over the course of that first evening, but the real trick was that he figured out why all those links were horked up. It turned out the new WordPress over on the new server was actually a higher revision of the software than the code I had over on VisiWeb. Niraj had kind of stumbled onto that idea too, but we were struggling with how to figure it out, when Bart suggested we just drag the entire installation from VisiWeb over to GoDaddy. Not running any installers or anything, just dragging them files over. Of course, we had to go back and edit all those admin.php files again and get rid of all the gremlins, but once we got it in, it worked without troubles. All right, so now you think I'm done, right? Well, to get it to the next level, Bart and I created a new subdomain called new.wordpress.com, and we got everything working in there. Yay! I figured I was just minutes away from complete. Oh my gosh, what about the forums? Oh no, guess what the forms are? Another MySQL database. Oh, the horrors. I have to go back in and do this again. So, on my own, I tried installing PHPBB on the new server. PHPBB is the application that drives the forums. I, of course, failed miserably and didn't succeed at all. So Bart says, well, why don't you just drag the installation over to GoDaddy from VisiWeb like we did with WordPress? Of course, that worked. Anybody can do that. That's easy. There were a couple of changes we had to do to get the database in there correctly after that, but compared to the WordPress installation, it was a dream. Probably only took about 4 hours. One funny part was before Bart signed off one night at about 2 o'clock in the morning, his time in Ireland, he said, "Don't forget, there's these two files that you have to delete. You have to delete this install file and this config file. Make sure you do that." So I popped up my journaling software and I wrote myself a note to do it. So, of course, you know, the next day I'm calling him going, "Bart, the forms aren't working. There's nothing in them." And he says, "So you didn't delete those files, huh?" And I was like, no, he didn't even say it snotty like that. He just said, "Well, there's two files that you need to delete." And right then I'm thinking, oh, man, that's the ones he told me to delete. And of course, it worked perfectly after that. All right, I should be done, right? Well, kind of turns out that I forgot about all of the files that existed over on the original Podfeet, like the audio files from before I started hosting them over on Libsyn, and all of the pictures that are embedded in the show notes. So back to our analogy of moving your house. Ooh, wasn't that a nice little ring? Forgot to turn that off. That's the clock on my Yahoo widget, or actually, I like to call them Confabulator clock. Anyway, so here we are, back to our moving the house analogy. It's just like I moved over to 456 Central Street. Now I've remembered to send the moving truck over, and the moving truck brought all the boxes over, but I forgot to actually pack anything in the boxes, so they're sort of empty when they got here. Jeez, that was pretty funny that I forgot all that stuff. One thing I should explain here, we never figured out a way to move files directly from VisiWeb over to GoDaddy. So everything we did, every single time we had to transfer anything from VisiWeb to GoDaddy, we went from VisiWeb to my local hard disk on my computer and then back up to GoDaddy. What a pain, because that meant I was uploading at my slow upload speed. This was really a pain when it came to all these audio files and images. It took 6.5 hours yesterday to drag everything down to my disk and then back up again. It did run unattended, so I was able to goof around most of the day, but boy, there was no bandwidth in my house to spare for most of the day. Well, I had to do the same thing to get the whole WordPress thing in the right place, moving it down and back up. Because remember I told you we put it in new.podfeet.com? Well, I needed to move it up a level to podfeet.com. And the only way we could figure out how to do that was to FTP it down to my disk and then back up to the right location. I still think there's got to be a better way. If anybody knows how to do that, that would be great. I don't have secure shell access, by the way, to the GoDaddy site, which is why I can't do like a simple move command if anybody was going to suggest that. I don't have secure shell access, so I only have FTP access, and evidently FTP doesn't support move. So anyway, well, we're just about getting ready to go here. Everything's going to be fine, and I had a sudden thought. I better do a test of Feeder to see if it's going to send the RSS file up to the website, to the new one, and make sure that it was going to work when I came around to podcast today. So, of course, it was all horked up and it didn't work. I actually don't know how I fixed that part. I did that one on its own. I just kind of flipped switches and retried passwords and changed from SFTP to FTP and flipped things around and, you know, just danced in a circle and did a rain dance kind of thing. And finally, it worked. Another thing that threw me for a loop was one you may not really realize that happens in the background. If you type in podfeet.com or www.podfeet.com, it actually takes you to podfeet.com/WordPress. That's called a redirect. I had a file in there that Bart made for me on the new site that did the redirect, but it's not really the most elegant method because you can actually see it happening. When you first get there, a blank screen comes up saying it's doing a redirect, and if it doesn't happen quickly enough, click on this link. Well, you don't really want to see that being done. The real way to do it is to set up a redirect through your hosting service. I had done that on VisWeb, but I couldn't figure it out on GoDaddy. Head back on over to Skype to bother Bart. I thought I had found it originally because they had a section called domain forwarding, and they kept calling that redirecting. Turns out domain forwarding is like, I have registered nosilicast.com just in case somebody got confused and didn't remember the podfeet.com part. So I have the name nosilicast.com forward you right over to Podfeet. Well, when I did that on podfeed.com, and I did a domain forward to podfeed.com/WordPress. It got in this infinite loop, so it actually sent you to podfeed.com/WordPress, and just went on and on and on. Okay, so I'm back bothering Bart, and he explained that while VisWeb had put a nice button on the website to allow me to create the redirect, it was actually just creating a file called htaccess that had one little line of code in it doing the redirect. All we had to do was drag that file over to GoDaddy, and we were all set. Well, okay, we should have been all set, but it didn't work. So at this point, Bart was actually stumped, and he said, "You know what, Allison? Call those guys at GoDaddy." I do want to say one good thing. Every single time I've tried to call them, they've been on the phone to me helping within 5 minutes, and I've probably called them 10 or 15 times in the last week. In fact, one time they actually called me at work to see, "Hey, we saw you were having trouble last night. Everything okay?" That's a miracle. VisWeb doesn't even have a real phone number, I don't think. Not one they answer, anyway. So I called them up, and the guy was really interested in trying to figure this out, and he hunted around, how could we make this redirect work and everything. And he said, "Well, let me see what you're talking about on your website." And he goes over and he goes, "What are you talking about? The redirect's working." I said, "No, it isn't." And I go back over and it started working all by itself. Apparently, that .htaccess file had to just propagate or something over time. Anyway, that's probably enough about this subject. But since it consumed pretty much 100% of my free time for at least a week, and about 50% of Bart's and Raj's time, with some side hours from Matt, I didn't get hardly anything done about testing out new tools to review for the show. I hope it was interesting for you hearing how all of this works, or at least my version of what I think we did. I'm astonished at the generosity of these fine gentlemen giving me so freely of their time. I asked Bart why he was willing to spend so much time on this for me, and he replied, "How many hours of entertainment have you given me through your podcast?" Isn't that a marvelous attitude? I guess I see his point, but it does not reduce his generosity one bit. I will be forever in his debt for all the work he did. I've been trying to think up a good name for him. Somehow Research Assistant Bart no longer sounds grand enough for his part in making this adventure a success. How about Guru, or Czar, or Web Hosting Stormtrooper? Well, I'll come up with something, but for now, I think I'll call him my dear friend Bart. If you think of any good ideas, stick them over in the forums. Well, listener Big C wrote in a letter I'd like to read to you with a couple of great software tips. I'll interrupt his letter to walk you through what I found out about the applications he recommends. Here's Big C's letter. "Hi, I am new to your show and enjoy it very much. I find you not so uber geeky that I can't follow the information or lose interest. You keep showing us good things to do with our computers, and I say thanks. Anyway, I'm a newly converted Mac user who knows the ins and outs of XP, so I approach problems a little differently than most Mac users, I think. I've been listening to a random selection of your shows to see if I would like it, so you may have already heard of this product. When I switched to the Mac in the middle of my podcast run, I was looking for all kinds of software to help me continue what I was doing in a way I was accustomed to. Of course, Mac does it better than XP, but I was unfamiliar with most programs. I too recorded and edited in GarageBand, and since I was clueless about M4A, I wanted to find a free converter. I found Switch from nch.com.au/switch. Being unfamiliar with iTunes, I found it easier to export to disk first and then convert the file to MP3 with Switch. I love this program. It supports the drag-and-drop functionality of OS X, it will convert almost any audio file to almost any other audio file, and you can set the standards of quality. Very easy and user-friendly. When you were talking about iTunes, that sounded more convoluted. Well, Allison here now. I decided to give Switch a whirl. NCH's website describes Switch as an audio file format converter for Windows and Mac. Yay, cross-platform, you know how I love that. It can convert audio files from many different file formats into MP3 or WAV files, including WAV to MP3, MP3 to WAV, WMA to MP3, and much more. I put a link in the show notes to the full listing of the file formats supported. I'm so stoked to see this program. I've been looking for a converter just like this. I've done endless searches going, come on, just help me move this from a WAV to an MP3. Come on. I've searched both Mac and Windows sites looking for it. So not only is Switch cross-platform, it's also free. They say in their notes, we make Switch audio file converter free in the hope that you will like it so much you will decide to upgrade to Switch Plus, which supports additional and Code 2 formats. I love that kind of marketing. Gets you hooked with great software and then provides value beyond that for the real enthusiast. The free version does come with the additional features of Switch Plus for the first 14 days, which kind of is good and bad. On the good side, you get to try out the Plus features. On the bad side, you might not be able to tell which features are which. I decided to check it out and run it anyway. I downloaded and installed Switch on the Mac, and it came up with a nice clean interface. Basically, you can add files, folders, you can remove files, play files, or stop a process. I really like drag and drop, and Big C said it worked, so I tried just dragging a file on top of Switch. Just like any good Mac program, it pulled that file right in. Down at the bottom of the window, you can see the output folder. It defaults to your documents folder, but that can get kind of messy, so it's really nice that they make it obvious how to set it to a different location. You choose the output file format next with a clean little pull-down. So, for example, if you've pulled in a .wav file, you can use the pull-down to choose MP3. There's also a format setting button, which changes depending on what file format you choose. For example, if you're converting to a WAV file, you can choose from high, medium, low, custom, or auto formatting for the quality. If you choose MP3 as the output format, you have a lot more choices, such as different bit rates, variable versus constant bit rate, channel encoding mode, all kinds of stuff in there. If you choose AIFF, there's no choices at all because AIFF is not a compressed format. So the format settings button is simply grayed out, since there's no choices to make anyway. I dragged a WAV file in and told it to make an MP3, and it did it. I gave it an MP3 file, told it to make it a WAV, and it did that too. I know that's not exactly a scientific, robust experiment to test every feature, but it did exactly what I asked it to do. The only complaint I can come up with is that the windowing seems a little bit hinky. If I Command-Tab to another application and then Command-Tab back to Switch, it doesn't come right up. It doesn't react. I click on it and nothing's happening. Instead, I have to click on another application and then click back to get it to pay attention to me. Seems like just a little bug. In any case, I've been looking for an application just like that, and I'm just so glad there's finally a freeware tool that both Windows and Mac can use, and that's going to help me a lot. I really appreciate that tip, Big C. Plus, it has a cool icon. Looks like a big old light switch. Gotta love that. Finally, Big C asks, one question for you now. I have just installed XP on the Mac via Boot Camp. I absolutely love the dual functionality and how amazingly intuitive Mac is by creating this program. Due to my programs, I still need some XP, unfortunately, and this seems to work best for me now. The question I have is, what do you think of Boot Camp, and would you recommend a different dual OS program instead of Boot Camp? Thanks for reading my ramblings. Well, I didn't think you rambled at all, Big C. This is a lot of fun. I did play with Boot Camp once, and many of the listeners may remember this story. Oddly enough, I was doing an experiment to see if I could completely eliminate OS X on a Mac. I did succeed. I got Windows on there with no Mac on at all. Personally, I love Parallels. Forgive the verbose explanation if you already have heard me talk about it, but Parallels allows you to run XP literally in parallel with OS X, so you don't have to reboot to get to Windows. It costs $79 list price from Parallels.com. There's a bunch of reasons it's cooler than Boot Camp. First of all, you don't have to reboot to switch to Windows. You also don't even have to run XP Service Pack 2. Let's say you only have Windows 98 CDs, or you only have an XP Service Pack 1 CD. Turns out you can run anything from Windows 3.1 up through XP, and even the release candidate for Vista. And you can run Linux, too. That's a lot of good stuff in one package. You also don't have to dedicate as much disk space to it. You tell it the maximum size it can expand to, but until it needs it, it doesn't take it. on the boot camp, you have to tell it, this is your partition and this is where you live, and you have to decide ahead of time and hope you don't screw up on choosing it. But on Parallels, I was able to tell XP, you can have 12 gigabytes, but right now it's only using 8. So Parallels also comes with a compressor program that squishes it back down, at least for a while. And that's helped me out. I've been able to get it back down under 4.7 gig so I can make a backup DVD of it. That way, if Windows ever gets horked up, like with a virus or one of the 3,628 stupid little programs I may load on it, I can just throw away the single file that represents the entire installation and just put the backup copy right in there, and I'm back and running. Really, really easy. The one reason you might want to consider boot camp, well, there's two. It's free, and free is something I sure like. You know, you do have to pay $79 for Parallels. But the other big reason to go with boot camp is that you have access to the real hardware drivers. For example, if you want to play high-end games and you need the real graphics cards, Parallels has these fake drivers that work pretty well for most stuff, but they aren't the real drivers, so you can't do high-end graphics like, you know, hardcore gaming. USB support is a little weird. Like, I like to run webcams and that kind of stuff, and it's only USB 1.1, not 2.0, and I don't understand that. And so I haven't been able to get some of those driver things working for webcams and some of the other USB things. A few other things are a little hanky, but certainly not enough to make it worth going to boot camp for me. One other thing is, if you're really considering buying a Mac and you think you're going to want to run Windows, I really want to convince you to look at MacMall.com or PCMall.com. And over there, they're selling Parallels really cheap. I want to say it was like $9 US last week. And they also can sell you Windows XP as an OEM version, meaning a really cheap version. I think it was around $70 last I saw for XP Pro, which is normally $300 if you think of it later. So if you're in the process of buying a Mac and you're pretty sure you want to run Windows on it, I really recommend you buying it through Mac Mall. Another cool thing I like about Parallels over Bootcamp is that I can store files that I'm using in Windows. Like, let's say I create a PowerPoint file over on the Windows side. When I save it, I can actually mount a network drive in Windows that's the Mac OS file system. So I can save a file and it shows up over on the Mac side. The nicest thing about that is I don't really have to back up the Windows side very often because all the real data files I've created are sitting over on the Mac side. And I can open them on both sides. Well, thanks for all the great ideas and questions, Big C. I'm going to hold off on the other reviews you sent me. I want to mess around with those programs first and see how they go. Well, my dear friend Bart sent in a tiny little application that does one thing and one thing well. It's called Ejector from jeb.com/en/ejector.shtml. That sounds funny. Oh, well, there's a link in the show notes. You can get to it there. You're not going to remember that anyway. Ejector's sole function is to give you a really easy way to eject disks, like disk images too, and iPods and CDs on the Mac. Ejector is a menu bar item. It gives you a little eject symbol up in the menu bar, and when you click it, you get a list of devices you have attached. I tested Ejector, and it did what it said it would do, quickly and efficiently. It didn't see my iPod, though, but then again, my iPod doesn't show up in the Finder either, except for a quick couple of seconds before iTunes takes control. I'm assuming Ejector could see it if I had it set up for plain old disk usage. I'm not sure if Ejector provides much more functionality than just hitting the eject next to the disk images in the Finder, but it might be a good tool for you. It's free, so it's worth a try. Although Jeb does mention that if you're so inclined, you could throw some money in his PayPal account. Well, we haven't done a good YouTube video in a while. There's a guy named Noah who took a picture of himself in the exact same position every single day for 6 years. Think about it. 365 days times 6 years is 2,190 times he took a photograph of himself. Thinking he's maybe a little bit of a narcissist. But anyway, he put them together in a little video on YouTube. Strangely compelling, Mainly, I find myself trying to figure out how he got his eyes lined up in the same shot every single time in the exact same place, because the eyes stay still and everything else is changing, his hair and his clothes in the background. A lot of them are in his apartment, but the eyes are always dead center. Maybe he put some, I don't know, how did he do that? See, it keeps bugging me. If anybody knows, let me know. Anyway, there's a link in the show notes to Noah's 6 years of photos. Well, that's going to wrap it up for a very long week of technology work, but a lot of fun learning so much. Please keep your great feedback coming to allison@podfeet.com, or you can send me a voice recording at nosillacast@gmail.com. And of course, head on over to the newly relocated Podfeet forums. We have avatars now. Check those out at podfeet.com/forums. Thanks for listening, and stay subscribed.